I argue that we have also already lost the war between Russia and Ukraine, and we're just using Ukraine as a proxy, because everything President Trump has tried to do, in the war in a day, in the war in 100 days, and now he's just picked a side, he said, with Secretary Rubio in June. And now then that cannot succeed. But that you wouldn't know that from listening to the supporters of President Trump on Western media. Here is what Senator McCormick had to say.
The tide is turning against Vladimir Putin. For more than 4 years, Russia has waged a brutal, unprovoked war of aggression against a free and sovereign Ukraine. Putin bet that Kyiv would fall in days. He bet that the West would fracture in response. And when that didn't work, he bet that Ukraine would break in a few months. And he was wrong on every count. And today, he finds himself in a moment of weakness. President Trump promised peace through strength, and his strategy is working.
There you have that again, that peace through strength thing, and it's working. Do you agree?
I think it's not Putin that has been wrong on every count. It is the senator that is wrong on every count. Every comment he made, it was not, if you like, an unprovoked, illegal invasion of Ukraine. That is just the narrative which is stripped of context. It doesn't go back to what was happening before Maidan. It doesn't go back to the American absorption of the Galen Organization towards the end of the Second World War and how that affected American thinking about Russia. It strips all the context out and just has it as a flat assertion. And so they have this flat assertion. Anyone that disagrees with it must be wrong. But it just, if you like, by decontextualizing everything down to these rather absurd simplicities, they provoke and cause and come bring us close to a much bigger danger, because the way this is going, there will soon be an escalation by Russia against a close ally of the United States, against Europe. And this is, I believe, going to come sooner or later, because the Europeans insist on that they have been encouraged and have the backing of the United States to build, construct, design longer and longer range cruise missiles and drones to attack deeper into Russia and to attack things that are completely unrelated to the war effort. These attacks on the Wildberries warehouses. Wildberries is like Amazon. What would you say if, you know, the Russia started attacking Amazon warehouses? You'd say, what the hell is all this about? And that's a question that needs to be asked. So, I mean, what is the aim of this war for America that they say they're going to win? Well, we know, because it's the same aim that's been there for nearly 200 years, to break up Russia, partition it into its separate component parts and to steal its resources. We've seen it happen three times now that war has been waged on Russia. I mean, the German war was one about empire too, expanding its empire. It was envious of Britain. Britain had India and all the resources of the East, which it plundered and made itself rich. And then Britain started preparing for war against against Russia. And then even during the war, I mean, you know, you have to think what Russians feel about this, because even during the Second World War, when Russia was an ally fighting the Germans, at some point Britain was supposed to support Russia, provide assistance to Russia, who was stuck in Leningrad at that time. And what happened? Well, Churchill whispered to Roosevelt and he said, look, you know, maybe the reserves should be delayed in going there, because isn't it better that they just kill more of each other during this time? Isn't that better? And then again, after the war, Churchill and Roosevelt signed this agreement afterwards to send everybody back to Stalin. There were Cossack units sent back whole to be, you know, lined up and executed. He sent back millions, refused to allow them to stay anywhere. And they came to this agreement to send them back so that they could be tried and hooded and then executed for their betrayal of the Soviet Union. I mean, there were some desperate things. Do you think Russia doesn't know any of this history? Does it not know it? Does it really think that this whole war started suddenly on the date that Russia invaded Ukraine after Kiev increased the attacks on Donbass by a factor of 17, the artillery shelling of the civilian areas of Donbass? It was obviously intended to provoke Russia into this attack in order to try and turn it into a NATO-wide conflict against Russia. But the Russians, I mean, you know, they know their history. I mean, unlike us, they do study history. They know their history. And so, you know, this is a bitter conflict. Long, many grudges, much ill feeling in it. But someone has to sit down. In my view, the first step was the first step actually that JFK took before he was assassinated. When he started to say, you know, we should acknowledge how much Russia lost fighting with us in the Second World War, how many men they lost, 27 million, how many people were lost in that. We should start from saying something like that. And I think it's the same. There has to be some sort of acknowledgement of the realities of what it is, not this sort of crude, childish, you know, simply sort of reducing everything to, you know, without any context to decontextualized world. Oh, Russia just, you know, came into Putin's head that he wanted to be an emperor again, and so he took part of Ukraine. I mean, this is the sort of stuff you wouldn't even get from a seven-year-old child writing an essay at school.
Right. So let me ask you, because I mean, again, you're painting a very clear picture that we're not going to win. The task is just militarily unattainable, and yet economically and militarily we keep trying, but it's going to fail. What does that failure look like? And especially if you can't decouple it even from the loss that's coming in the Middle East. What is that going to do to NATO if, however this gets resolved, whether that's Russia taking even Kiev at some point in the future or whatever, what does that do to NATO? How does it come out of this war?
Well, I think it doesn't come out of this war. It's, I think, already fracturing, and it will be fractured further. It only stays together because, you know, this is what Brussels and NATO want, you know, to wave. I mean, because where did this Ukraine war come from the NATO perspective, was, you know, after the war on terror and everything, what was the purpose of NATO, you know, in the modern era? What was the purpose? What was it going to do? It wasn't going to fight terrorism forever. It hasn't made a good job of that. But what was it going to do? Ukraine. Yes, Russia. That's where we are. And, of course, under the Treaty of Lisbon, the European Union is obliged to follow the lead of NATO. It has no free choice in this. It's in the treaties. Don't forget, I worked for Secretary General of NATO, who was then the high representative of the European Union. And he told me very clearly, you know, European policy has to follow NATO policy. Now, some people in America think this has been a good thing for Europe. And maybe it has. Maybe, I mean, I know some people say, well, you know, it stopped the Europeans from fighting each other all the time. And that's, maybe there's some truth in it. But what it also did was to kill politics in Europe. It smothered real politics, because everything had to be reduced to centrism, had to be reduced. You know, we have the cordon sanitaire. That is, you know, you're not allowed to ally with, talk to the far right. Now it's also the far left. They say you can't talk to just the center, and the center has to follow NATO, follow. And as the ground in Europe, as the people start to explode from the contradictions in the economy, that they, you know, they can't live on the what they're given, while the elites float off on the boondoggle of NATO and new conferences and more money for more buildings. But for 90% of the population, it doesn't trickle down. And since you can't protest and you can't vote against it, what do? You get more and more angry at the elites and more angry at NATO. And you argue, it'll be, get rid of NATO, get NATO out, we don't want it. That will be the mood on the street, I predict, in Europe, the consequence of this war.
I couldn't possibly disagree with you. I mean, the logic you lay out is ironclad. I mean, we see the trends moving in that direction right now. I wish we had more time to go down this path. I look forward to having you back on next time and send people to Conflicts Forum so they can see more things from Alistair Crook here, because, man, we just can't get enough of it. Pretty sobering conclusions here. But again, people need to know the truth and not go after this nonsense that they keep hearing on these mainstream media, like we just played a second ago. And although that's actually from the Senate floor, but we now know the truth, and we really appreciate you bringing it. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me to speak.
And by the way, we're going to have Glenn Deason back here in about a minute and a half. So look to that link on our channel, and we will see you there with Glenn in just a few minutes. And then at 1 o'clock, we have Ambassador Chaz Freeman back. Always a delight to hear from him as well. We'll see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.